interview with Frederick Cox, the material to be used for a biography of my father. Mr. Cox, where would you like to start? When did you first meet my dad?
I met your father in Rockland in the spring of, I think it was 1938, when he was a CIO organizer to come in to trail, try and upset the company.
Would you like to tell me something about the setup of Company Union?
Well, the Company Union was strictly, as the word says, was a union run by the company. The workers had the opportunity of electing their representatives, but Mr. Blaylock attended most of the meetings. Mr. Blaylock, in case you don't know, happened to be the general manager of the Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company. And most of the men that were elected to that committee were company men and afraid to speak out on behalf of the workers. They were always prepared to say yes to Mr. Blaylock.
Was this a traditional company town? I'm thinking of where you rent the houses, where there's electricity sometimes for the stores there. Or was it kind of a semi-company town?
Oh, I would say that Trail in the 30s was a fairly open town. There was a company store. A number of people had bought the houses and gone to the consolidated to have them financed. But it was much different. Back in the 20s, shortly after the Mining Federation had been kicked out of Rock, during those days, it was fairly close country town. If a organizer of a union came into town, he was usually marched out of town with the rifles backed by the Pinkerton men.
Oh, they had those there too, did they?
Oh, yes, we had those in Rock.
Were there bunkhouses, company bunkhouses, that sort of thing?
To tell the truth, I don't know of any of the bunkhouses that I had any contact with. Now, there may have been some in Tadnack, but most of the miners lived in the hotels or boarding houses or their own homes.
And how did Dad make his first contact when he came in to organize?
Well, your father was known, whether it was true or not, I do not know, as a communist organizer. And he came in and contacted the Communist Party in Rockland, which was a fair nucleus for a small town. And through his contact with the Communist Party, a number of the communist members were also supporters of the TCF at the day. And I, being a member of the TCF, was approached by
one of my communist friends to see if I was interested to attend a meeting in his home. And I asked him what the meeting was all about. He told me they had a CIO organizer in, and he was going to give a talk. I attended that meeting, and from there on in, I became a charter member of the CIO in the Trail local.
That's quite a wonderful thing, you know, to start out as a charter member. That shows you had a great deal of guts, if I may use that word.
Well, I think that we did, because, and as I said, Trail was run by the clique, and Mr. Blaylock had vowed that there would never be another union in Trail after the big strike of 1918-19.
And can you tell me some of the difficulties that Father encountered trying to organize in Trail? Some of the tactics Mr. Blaylock and his buddies used?
Well, I'd say what the most effective tactic used by Mr. Blaylock and his company officials was making sure that we never had any opportunity to go to the press or to the local radio stations, because the CMNS being the largest company in the interior, was most likely paying the shop to keep the radio station and the papers in operation, and whether you know it or not, you have to be able to get some publicity one way or another to let the public know what you're doing.
And what kind of things did Father do to organize? Did he have any tactics that you remember, any specifics?
We held the odd social, I know, in Rawson Trail, and at those socials we would have a speaker to come in and explain to the people there what the trade union was proposing and what we hoped would be a benefit for the workers of Trail to, if they would join with the CIO, which at that time was making great strides in the United States, and we were looking forward to that quite possibly the CIO would become the one big union which had been defeated in 1919.
And you became somewhere along the line a member of this company union or an executive, did you?
Yes. During our organization period, we'd always figure out what were the best tactics to make inroads into the company union so that we could get a voice in there and let the workers know what we were doing. So we arranged that the next general election of the Workmen's Committee, that those who had the courage to let their name stand as CIO members would run for the Workmen's Committee, knowing full well it was a company union, but we would run for this Workmen's Committee as CIO men against the incumbent Workmen Committee company man. And I'm quite proud and not ashamed of it to say that I let my name stand for the pattern shop and foundry, and I was elected on my first try as a CIO man, along with four or five, there's but three I can, two or three I can recall their names. But going to the first meeting after that, it was quite an experience that the CIO boys, we were sat on one side of the table and the company stooges sat on the other. Mr. Blaylock walked into the room, walked down, tapped all of the stooges on the head as if to say, well, boys, good thing we've won again. And if looks would have killed all of the CIO men, we should have dropped off their chairs dead that day.
I can imagine my father being very pleased with that kind of a setup.
Oh, I think your father was very happy to think that we had made inroads. And although there was maybe only five or six of us there as CIO men out of the 40-some-odd members they had on their committee, but five or six were there as the opposition to the company stooges. And don't forget that many a time in the provincial government, British Columbia, they've been down to six in an opposition too.
Right. Yes, sometimes just one voice can do enough. And you did cause a little disturbance in there, as some of the reports I've read, when you questioned the gentleman in that company union going to the man who published a union paper and stating that he didn't want any CIO material in there. Could you tell me part of that?
Well, it's going back a long time. I just forget a lot of it, but I know that we did just cause quite a discussion, because they didn't want us to have any publicity at all, even in their minutes. They were trying to ignore us, so we had to keep talking, and so that the membership, or the employees will say, can't call them membership because we didn't have every all signed up at that time, but we had the employees had to know that the few of us that were CIO men that were at least fighting and getting in our two bits worth.
And was that kind of a fight making an impression on the other workers in the smelter, seeing that you had the strength to speak out?
Well, I would say it must have. For the only proof that I can give you is that shortly after the war was declared, and Harvey Murphy came in to organize for the mine mill, the groundwork, which had been laid out by the CIO, stood well for the mine mill, and the mine mill eventually took over complete charge of the Consolidated Mining Smelting Company operations.
And I have here some papers put out by, I guess, it's the company union. Great remarks about they don't want a red, and how Mr. Blaylock was going to look after you, and how the bonus system, you would get your share. Would you like to make any comment on that kind of material?
Well, yes, I'd say no. The wage structure at Trail, before they were organized in the mine mill, we had a basic wage and a bonus. And the bonus was supposed to be given to us on the production and the price of lead. But it was amazing that when the price of lead went sky high, is the time that Mr. Blaylock was the advocate to get rid of the bonus system, because he didn't want to give us the bonus when at the time when we should be getting it. It was all right when giving us a bonus when he thought he was going to be able to keep the union out. But this idea of only prepared to go so far in a bonus, well, that's useless, because if your production, if you're going to have to pay a bonus on production and the cost of the metal, well, you should get your bonus at the metal when price went out of sight, sky high. You should be, we should have been the highest paid men in Canada.
Yeah. I see, too, where during some of these activities, Mr. Blaylock saw that y'all got a 25-cent raise, and there's some statements in the union paper that if the fear of a trade union would get you a 25-cent raise, I wonder what the devil a union could do for you.
Mm. Well, that's quite right. They tried a lot of tactics like 25-cent raise, and the medical scheme we had in Trail, they continued to give us a few more goodies along in that line, and all of this, don't forget, is just to try and keep the trade union out. And if the company can do that to keep you out, well, once the trade union gets in and gets a master contract, you can just imagine what happened to Trail today. But at that time, and look what's happened to it today. They've got a real good thing going for them today.
I see, too, in these union papers, there's great talk about silicosis, which, of course, has always been in the mining industry, and smelters have certainly had, the one in Trail anyhow, a very, very bad history. I read in 1936 that the federal government gave the United States $250,000 for the damage that happened to their farms and crops, etc., on the other side of the border. And I know some of the history of what's happened in Trail with their lead fallouts and with their silicosis. The union was at that time, even then, talking about these very, very poor conditions for workers.
Yes. See, at the time that your dad came to organize in Trail, the mines in Rossland were closed, so that there was no silicosis problem coming out of Rossland. But the big problem with the Consolidated Mining and Smelting was being leaded. And the CM&S, I think right to this day, still fight lead. They try to make up. But once you get lead in your bloodstream, it stays there. And there are people that I personally knew at the time when I lived in Trail, that retired and left Trail and had to come back to Trail to live so they could take in that certain amount of lead fumes and that every day to stay alive. And as far as the damage, which you quoted a little while ago, with paying off to the United States, that's quite right. You can just imagine how thick those fumes must have been in those days, because out of those fumes, smoke going into the air, all this pollution, the Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company built one of the largest fertilizer plants and chemical plants in the world up at Warfield, just by reclaiming the smoke and the acids that were going into the air at that time and floating down across the line and destroying all the farmlands.
I find it extremely interesting that the government would pay the damage, not the smelter.
Well, at that time, I believe that the government was the smelter, because first of all, you have to realize that during the Depression years, the CPR and the Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company, the Sun Life of Canada, are practically the same company. And I would say that they did as much dictating to the government as anybody's ever done, and they had their own way.
There was an incident where my father's car was destroyed. I have read, and it appears like it had to go through a gate where there was guards, and there was a great deal of discussion as to which police chief, the one in Rosslyn or the one in Trail, should investigate it. As far as I know, nothing has ever come about that, though they may know now, some of the boys in Trail who did it. Could you give me some background?
Well, the only background, we had planned on having a cellar. I think it, if I recall, I'm not sure, quite sure that it, I'm not sure whether it was a May Day parade or whether it was just a parade, but we were going to have a, there was some event taking place in Trail, and we had decided that we were going to decorate a car up as a CIO car. And we'd gone to a lot of trouble to get Arthur's car in shape so that we could get it all decorated. And the night before the parade, Arthur's car was stolen and pushed over the bank at Mary's Flats. I think that's what the name of the flats was. Now, it's long since I've been in Trail that I get a little confused with some of these flats they have there. Well, as soon as we found out this, and we thought, well, if that's the tactics that they're going to use, well, we'll show them that there's more than one car in the city of Trail and Rawson. And it was my own car that we decorated and put into the parade so that the CIO was represented in the parade.
Very good. I know there's at least one more incident that I can remember. My father was arrested. I think he got 7 days in jail, and I think it was for putting a dent in a car, and it may have covered more areas. Can you remember that?
I just think remember your dad being put in jail, but the facts as to the reason, I mean, they escaped me. It's going back quite on, they escaped me. At the present time, I wouldn't be able to.
Okay, I'll check
yeah.
the newspapers when I get
yeah.
there. And there is one other area. My father not only was accused of, but was a communist. There's no doubt about that. I would like your impressions of the kind of man he was, the kind of organizer he was, and also, did the Red Scare bother a great many people?
Well, first of all, coming to your last, did the Red Square bother? I would say in those days it did bother a good percentage of people, but there was a nucleus of working class people that were progressive. They weren't known as communists. They were known as the CCFers, and of which I belonged. And just the CCF knew full well that if we were going to accomplish anything at all, that the Communist Party and ourselves were going to have to work together to organize trail, because you cannot win a fight if you have the working class divided. And there's only one way to do it, is for the working class, regardless of what your political beliefs are, is to get out and realize that if you're fighting for your own economics, you have to get out and back one another if you're going to beat the boss.
We go back to united we stand and divided we fall.
That's what it is.
Lamb, would you give your impressions of my father as a man, as an organizer?
Oh, that's right. As a man, personally, I like Arthur Evans. He was a wonderful, good speaker. And I found Arthur to be a very clean living man. Arthur was a highly principled man in the trade union movement, as I know. And I imagine that when he fires his own political beliefs, he was just as highly principled in his political beliefs as he was in his trade union beliefs. And Arthur Evans never at any time tried to tell us that the only way we could get going was by joining the Communist Party. Arthur knew and was smart enough to know that in the area around Rosslyn Trail, there was more people leaning to the left, and that he didn't want to drive them away by trying to force his political beliefs on anyone.
Okay. And my father left trail. The reasons given are illness. I'm not altogether sure that's right. Do you happen to know anything about that area?
No, I wouldn't know. I can recall when you...
I ask you to be extremely honest.
Yes.
We're doing a biography, and the good and the bad will be there.
I wouldn't know why your father left. I can't recall, as I say. That's going back to 1938, and I can't recall. I know your father left, and shortly after your father left, we had a young fellow come in to trail. It seems to me his name was John McPeak or some such name as that. But why, I have no idea.
Do you remember Gordon Martin at all?
I recall a name, Martin. Whether his name was Gordon or not, I would not say.
He was a very young man, in my recollection at that time, because I know he left trail and went to UBC, passed the bar exam, and was refused to be allowed to be a lawyer. Does this?
Oh,
I recall
the young fellow, but now that you mentioned this, being refused to the bar of British Columbia, I recall that, but I just cannot pinpoint him.
Yeah, I just couldn't write my father's biography without mentioning Gordon, and anything that you might have known, I would have been pleased to have heard. I'm going to thank you very much, Mr. Cox, and may I have permission to use this information on my father's biography?
Yes, you can have my permission to use this.
Thank you very much.